Okay, today is Thursday, February 6th, 2020, and my name is Faith Hoffmeyer, and this is a phone interview for the Madison General Hospital School of Nursing Oral History Project. Elaine, do you mind spelling and stating your last name for an audio check?
It's Kleppfel, Kleppfel.
Great, thank you. So to jump right into it, can we start with a brief description of your early life, where you grew up?
Oh, I was born and raised in the Twin Cities of Neenah-Menasha, Fox Valley. Born actually at the hospital in Neenah, but lived in Menasha. My father had been married before, and so I had four half sisters. His first wife died, and then he married my mother, and then they had me. And so I was the youngest of the family, and most of my half sisters were out of the home when I was growing up, and they were having families of their own. So I became an aunt at a very early age. Anyway, but I grew up in a very happy home, and I was the only child of my parents, and it was a very it was during the I was born in 1936, so it was through the war years, World War II, and but then I just remember being very, other than that time, feeling, like I was very safe and played outside a lot, and everybody just had to go in when the lights went out or when the sun went down. And very, very nice life, except when I was 10 years old. My father had a sliver in his hand, and he told me how to take it out, and then he told me I should be a nurse. And so that began that story. And after that, I always thought, yes, I'm going to be a nurse. And then when I was 12, he died, and he had a stroke. And so it was my mother and I after that. And she had to go to work. And I learned to come home from school and, start supper and do a lot of the housework that she'd done previously. But I had lots of friends, and I would say I had a very nice childhood as far as it went, with a lot of advantages. We lived in a town that was had a lot of wealth, a lot of money in it, so we had some very nice opportunities. And I rode my bicycle all over, and did a lot of swimming and boating. I lived near Fox River and Lake Winnebago, and had, a very, very uneventful childhood other than my father's death. And went through high school and Menasha High School, and every time I met with the school counselor, they'd always talk about our careers. And I think, well, I'm going to be a nurse. So I took all the classes I needed for that eventuality. And that was about it. As I said, I had a lot of nieces and nephews, some older than myself, some younger, that I grew up with, and lots of friends.
Oh, thank you. That was great background. You mentioned, when you were 10 years old, when your father had the sliver in his hand, I assume you were the one that was taking the sliver out and he was
I did.
impressed.
I did. He taught me how to sterilize a needle and remove it.
Wow.
I don't know. My mother was always going to night school or something in classes, or she worked at the Red Cross. And so I guess I was the one at home alone. So I got the job.
What did your mother do when she went back to work?
She worked for what is now Menasha Corp. She was the traffic controller, and that means that all of the trucks that transported all the corrugated boxes they sold and all the containers, that she made sure the routes were mapped out for the drivers and made sure that they were getting to their destination at the right time, right place, and using the proper routes. I just remember when she got mad because somebody didn't use it and he got stuck under an overpass. So, yeah, she was very good mathematically. She had a good mind. And so she was real good figuring out these things and enjoyed the job.
And was nursing a popular career in your community growing up?
Well, I think as most everybody knows, when we grew up during that time, there weren't a lot of opportunities for women. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, you were going to be either a teacher or a nurse or get married and have kids and be a housewife. There weren't a lot of other things even discussed. So all of my friends, most of them were going into becoming teachers, which several did. And some were, one friend did get into being interior designer, but the rest, you know, married young and settled down and had families.
Did you have any perception of any perceptions of nursing school prior to attending?
Of nursing school itself?
Yes.
No, I mean, our family doctor was a big influence, I suppose, in my life, but and his nurse, and she was the one who graduated from Madison General.
Oh.
And so she told, and her husband was our pharmacist, and so she always talked about when I would go in there, you know, for my annual checkup or whatever, and I would talk to her about nursing, and she'd always say, well, you know, you should go to Madison. You should go to Madison General. That's where I went, and it was really good. And so, I mean, it was, I just sort of fell into this thing that I had my career mapped out for me, where I was going and what I was going to do. And it was just a sort of, that's it. And I was happy with that. So that's how it all came to be.
Great. What years did you attend Madison General Hospital School of Nursing?
From 1954 to 1957.
And what were your first impressions of Madison when you first got there?
Oh, goodness. Well, I had been here in Madison a couple times before because our high school basketball team came down. We won the state championship, and we won twice the consolation the first time in the state. So I had been to Madison, and one of my good friends, her cousin, was going to the university. So we stayed with her at the dorm, and so I got to see a little of that. And then I was down here for the governor's conference on youth, I think when I was either, I think I was a junior then. Maybe a senior, kind of forgot. So I was here in Madison at that time and stayed actually at the home of who was then the superintendent or administrator of the VA hospital.
Oh.
And we went to various things on campus, lectures and what have you, you know, from various politicians and people from the UW. So I had that taste of Madison prior to coming here, but I didn't, you know, when I came down first to go into school, for the interview into the school, you know, that was kind of a different feeling, and being accepted was, you know, I felt great that I was going to be actually a student here.
What was the interview process like?
Well, I don't remember a lot of it. I just know that I think at that time, Hazel Goff and Ella Allison were just rather new at the school. They'd taken it over. The School of Nursing had lost its accreditation prior to this, and they were brought in, both from the East Coast, to get us reaccredited.
Oh.
And So they were very knowledgeable, very big in the field, very well known in the field. But of course, I didn't know that at the time. And so they were a little scary to me when interviewing because they were very professional. And but it went well, and my mother was with me, and so I just remember that I really wasn't worried about getting in. I guess I just thought it was a given. I don't know why. But it was kind of, this is a new experience, and you just kind of take it all in and answered the questions and then left. And then we got the letter saying I was approved. And I had never had any doubts. And when I think back about that, I thought how dumb I was. But that's the way it was.
Mary did inform us that you were part of the 1950s reaccreditation effort. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Well, the school was being reaccredited or had to win back the accreditation, and I think it was a matter of the kinds of instructors we had, who was teaching what, and then how well the students did. And it's just like it's any program, any education program has to be accredited. So they have to go through certain steps. And at the time, it was certainly looking at the background of the educators we had, who was doing it, what. And we did the first year. We went to the university for a lot of our classes. So we would go from McConnell Hall over to, wherever, whatever building it on campus. And at the time, I don't think, I mean, I wasn't aware that we were being reaccredited, but after I got into administration, I kind of understood what that all entailed. But it was certainly the fact that how many graduated, how well they did, what were the scores on the course, the boards, state boards afterwards. And there's a lot of, I think, things that go into it that they're all looked at as part of the accreditation process. Quality.
Do you remember how large your class was?
In our class, we had 56.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you lived in McConnell Hall?
We did.
Can you talk a bit about that experience?
Oh, it was great. I mean, the hall, McConnell Hall, was lovely. And I do remember going in the first time and being assigned to a room, and then I had a roommate, which who I'd never met before, and she was from Wisconsin Rapids. So we sat down and got to know each other, and our parents, got to know and talk a little bit. And then they were gone, and we were on our own. And so we eventually got to know the other people on our floor. We were on the second floor, and way at the end, by the back staircase. And the other gals in our class, we just gradually we met and got to talking, and you get to be close very quickly, because you're all facing the same thing. So we were a tight group, and McConnell Hall had a lovely living area downstairs. They had a nice lounge on every floor, and they our big bosses, Miss Goff and Miss Allison, lived in the lower level, way down, so they were in the building as well. And I liked McConnell Hall. We had a great time there. Did a lot of crazy things there.
In your email, you mentioned bat chasing parties at McConnell Hall.
We did.
What does
We
that
had,
mean?
well, we had a year when the windows had and screens, some of them had to be replaced or repainted, and so they were, it was just, upkeep. But that meant that all of a sudden screens were off and windows were open and bats came in. I think I know my roommate and I, we figured out if we opened the window from the, and it was hot out, so we needed the windows open. So we figured out if we opened the windows from the top down and then pulled the shade down over that, that helped. But there we would chase the bats when they came in. We'd have brooms and whatever, and we'd go chasing them up and down the halls and try to get them out. And sometimes we caught them, and sometimes when we caught them, we if they didn't, if they were alive, most of the time we killed them, actually. Then we sometimes left them in front of the upperclassmen doors. So, and one of our the house mothers lived there, and she came flying out to us one time because a bat had gotten into her room, so we had to go rescue her and get the bat out of her room. And, yeah, we did. We had bat chasing, and it was just for a couple of weeks during one summer, but it was certainly interesting. And down in the main lounge downstairs, there were always two or three bats whirling around up in the ceiling. There were, you would go down there. Everybody would bring a broom or something, and we'd go down there and chase those bats. But that was just due to the year we were being... The screens were being replaced or repainted or whatever.
What were some of the social or recreational activities that you and your friends engaged in?
Well, we played a lot of cards. We had a lounge on our floor that everybody gathered in, and it was quite a nice room. One of the rooms that is over the front door, so it's kind of a round shape with a lot of windows, and it was spacious. And so there were always groups that played different games, card games or, you know, board games in there. And I think at that time most everybody smoked, so you'd have to kind of cut your way through the smoke. But and I think back and I think, oh my Lord, what we did. But, so we did a lot of that when we weren't studying. We also went out a lot. There were many calls for blind dates. And there were, you know, the university being there, there was a lot of social life going on. So everybody went out a lot. And we did a lot of ice skating over at Vilas Park. We went swimming at Vilas Park. It was very nice being, you know, close enough that we could walk there. Mm. And there was Park Street, which had a lot of fun places to go into. And we did, I remember, I'm trying to think of the name of the ice cream parlor that's up at the top of Park Street. They made milk and ice cream. It was a dairy. But that was always a fun place to go get a malt. And we just... did a lot of different things that kids do.
Did you eat your meals at the hospital?
Yes.
Yeah. How was the food?
Well, as I recall, good. Never remember feeling like I wasn't fed well.
So now moving on to your education, can you talk a bit about some of the nursing art skills that you learned at Madison General Hospital, like drawing blood or changing linens, giving baths, and so forth?
Well, we certainly had the hands-on. At that time, hospitals relied on the students a lot for a lot of the care actually given. I mean, the students actually covered all three shifts, and the senior students were the ones that worked, you know, more the night shifts. And as a new student, after we had been through classes and had gotten introduced through our dummies that we practiced on, and we practiced on each other, giving shots. You know, we always had the oranges or whatever around to practice on, and And we learned how to do the basic bed baths and talking to patients, being comforting and listening, and kind of being aware, looking, making sure we noticed and noted, any different things that should be charted or recorded that might be influencing a person's outcome. And I do remember that our first year there was one of the last big polio epidemics. And I remember we all learned how to do the hot packs. And, we'd have these big machines where they would just get steaming hot. And then we'd have to place them on the limbs of the polio patients. And, oh my goodness, that was difficult to do. Because it was, they were very hot, but just working with the polio patients and then those that were in the iron lungs, so much of that was so sad. So we learned a lot of empathy very early and certainly learned how to do hot packs. We also had long-term care patients that you don't have in hospitals today. And I do remember one, Martha. She'd been there a couple of years. She was barely responsive, but she was well taken care of. Her skin was absolutely perfect. We knew how to do skin care, boy. Prevent bed sores. And we also learned how to do trach care on her because she had a tracheostomy. And it was just the way it was in those days. We learned on those patients. And it, it was, when I look back on it, it was kind of amazing. But it was interesting times.
In what ways do you think it was amazing? And that, if you mind, if you wouldn't mind explaining a bit more about that.
Well, because we were actually learning on real patients. And I mean, today we have the, the simulators. We have a lot of the, they just don't allow that today. So there was no, there, plus technology. I mean, you can go up on a computer and learn a lot of what we had to learn in actual touching and doing. So it's different. Very different.
And what was it like in your third year being on the polio unit?
Well, that was our first year.
Oh, your first year.
Yeah, that was the first year when we were really rather new. Yeah.
How do you think that affected your education?
Well, I mean, I think it affected it only in what we were so busy. It was so much heavy work to do that you learned how to use your time well, but you learned how to, the empathy part of caring for patients in iron lungs, patients who were, young, who suddenly could not walk. They were just so damaged, psychologically by this, that it was hard to see and think, boy, that could be me. And it was hard to take care of them, but it was, and then it didn't always feel good for them. There was a lot of discomfort involved, and so it was a kind of a tough time, but it was what it was at that point. Polio was still had not been, and that, as I say, it was the last year though of the big epidemics. After that, the Salk vaccine came out, and polio no longer was the problem that it was before that.
And you also mentioned in your email about memories at Mendota and the VA
Yes.
hospital. Do you mind telling me a bit about that?
Well, again, different times, and I think back, and oh Lordy, I mean, Thorazine was the big drug, and we had everybody on Thorazine. They were like walking dumb mummies. I mean, it was sad when I think back on it, how we had everybody so drugged that they were just like zombies. And so I remember that part, but I remember the part about, the electric shock treatments we did and the insulin shock treatments that were done at that time. The water kinds of treatments, there were a lot of things that today would seem almost barbarous, and yet it was the accepted treatment at the time, or the only thing we had, to work with at the time. But and I remember some of the patient where you worked on a unit where they were all patients who were out of control. Nothing, they would just all of a sudden could go into a rage. And they were all in like cells. They were in like locked cells. And I remember one who he act the doors were like steel bolted doors. And this man got into such a rage that he actually knocked that door out of the hinges and out. And I was running down the hall to help. People were yelling. All the orderlies were hiding behind the desk, and everybody was afraid. And he was just like the wild man, just somebody who's completely out of control. Well, we finally pinned him down, enough of us, that we gave him, whatever medication was required to calm him down. But yeah, there were incidences like those, and then, as I said, the other ones where they were almost like zombies. Or they were people who were just delightful. And many of the patients were. And I remember one who was, she was definitely relate one.
She was what?
And
I'm sorry, I
she was
missed that.
definitely related to the Queen of England. She had I mean, she had a story that was so convincing that I was going around thinking, well, this could be true. We were almost believing her, and of course that wasn't true at all. But she was a royal, and she acted like it, and she pr pretended or put on, her whole bearing was that we had to treat her like she was a royal being, and that was in her, what her mind was at that time. So lots of interesting things happened to us at Mendota. But we certainly learned, about the whole scope of mental illness. But things today are certainly different.
Were there any other practices or methods that were used routinely at the time that might be considered unusual today?
You mean at Mendota?
In general, during your
Oh, in
education?
general? Oh, well, when you think about it, most every, I mean, we evolve. Everything starts out at a one level and eventually evolves and gets better. And so, sure, most surgical procedures, everything that we've learned, have evolved into something a lot different than it was back then. But at that time, it was the best that we had.
And what about your time at the VA hospital?
Well, that was interesting because that taught us how to deal with infectious disease and how to take care of yourself and not to get infected, and how to help those that were. Many, being they were mostly veterans, so many were from not this area. Mostly, there were a lot from Chicago, and we just got, I think, to be mostly, I would say, other than what we could do for them physically, mostly it was really we were there to not to entertain them, but to keep them busy, to make them feel that, it wasn't the end, things were going to get better, but it was for them a long, long time of having to be, in a hospital. And so it was kind of, I think they looked forward to the new classes every 3 months or whenever they came in, because I think that was the breakup and the monotony they had. But I do remember one time I just had, I don't know how I got tapped. I think I was on an elevator, and one of the doctors came around and said, you were going to help me. And they had a patient with miliary tuberculosis, which means that it was all over his body and internally, on the internal organs. And the treatment of choice at that time was exposure to sunlight. And we had to open him all up, and I had to scrub in and handle and take out one organ after another. We kind of lifted up and made sure it was exposed to light.
Wow.
And then that was the cure. And so that was probably my one big experience at VA that, you know, still is with me.
And you also spent some time at Cook County Hospital?
Well, yes, that was a whole different experience. That was for pediatrics.
Okay.
And so we spent 3 months there. Big city. You know, young gals that were, and also Illinois had a younger drinking age. You could drink at 18 there. So we were like, you know, people being left out of a cage. Woo! But the first thing I remember is all the kids and, you know, the number of cribs and beds in a huge ward and the how, you know, they just were so sad because sometimes they weren't that sick. But there they were, nobody to take care of them. And there's so many memories. I mean, we lived on top of a high rise. It was the nurse's dorm, and we were way up high. And we could look down, and that whole area, South Chicago, was kind of interesting to look at. We saw a lot of prostitutes and a lot of things going on below us. And we got quite an education. But then we'd go down into the hospital through tunnels. And the tunnels were always there was the kind of walk area, and in either side there were narrow gullies where there was any drainage and rats. So you were always down there with the rats. And they warned us never to walk alone. Always go in groups. So we always did. And we would go from, you know, building to building by the tunnel and be very careful about where we walked and how we got there, and made sure the rats stayed away. And we were also there. I was there during the fall when election time was on, and that was interesting because here's this children's hospital, and there are election posters all over the place. There are candidates out there trying to get elected, you know, campaigning. And so it was kind of an interesting time. And then the roaches. I remember the roaches. You'd go into the rooms at night, and you'd turn on the light, and you would hear, shh, and it would be all the roaches that were picking up crumbs from all the cribs.
Wow.
All of a sudden, racing for, there was a sink always in the middle of the room, or in the middle of the wall at the end of the room. And the sink and the pipes in the sink, under the sink, is where they came from. And you would hear the swish as they all ran for that pipe. But that's, that was, and they would be in the cribs, they would be all over the place, because little kids, when they would eat, always left crumbs around. So it was an education all in itself. And certainly you got used to being, as we were from Madison, mostly a white community. And in Chicago, at Cook County, most of the patients were black. So we got to be quite involved in, you know, the differences in the races and the cultures. And it was interesting. It was a real education, as I say.
And you said you were there fall during an election.
Yes.
Which election was it?
Oh, God, I don't know. 50, it would be, I think I was there in the fall of 56. It would have had to have been November. Because I know we went down to Marshall Field to see the Christmas decorations. So it would have been that year of 56. But I don't remember. I mean, the mayor, I know the mayor that had been there forever was running. I can't remember his name now, but he'd been there forever. And but I don't remember the others. But it was, and we sold our blood. The University of Illinois was not far from Cook County Hospital. And we'd go over there and sell our blood so we had money so we could, go shopping in Chicago. And lots of good Italian restaurants. I mean, there were a lot of things we had a lot of fun in Chicago, learning how to, get around with the in the big city, using the public transportation. But we always went in groups.
How many of you were in Cook County?
In at one of our well, our class, I don't know how many in our class were in that rotation. There was the same group of us pretty much went through each, between, I think they kind of went sort of by alphabet, but so we were kind of together as we went into the Mendota VA and then Cook County. And there was always maybe 20 of us. I can't even tell you. But the group, we always, as I said, there was groups that we didn't all go together at once, but several of us always made sure that we were together. We didn't go off alone. So we'd find out who was interested in doing this or who was interested in doing that, and get together a group and off you'd go.
And you said that you were working in pediatrics.
Yes, that was our 3 month rotation in pediatrics, yes.
Did you have any preferred rotations or enjoy some over others, maybe?
Well, I enjoyed all of them for different reasons. I mean, we were learning about, mental illness at Mendota. We were learning about infectious disease and TB, particularly at VA. And then we were learning, to pediatrics. And so they were things that were not, you were not able to get here at Madison General. So they, had these contracts or agreements with the other hospitals, provide the education for us. So off we would go to those and have, and it was good experiences. It was not just the experience of the different medical condition, but it was also the experience of living and seeing and meeting people from different cultures, different backgrounds, different whatever kinds of thoughts they had. That was certainly broadening.
What were your classes like?
Well, our classes in McConnell Hall were always interesting, I think. As I said, I remember a lot of the doctors lectured to us, and we were ta I was talking to a classmate the other day. We, at the time, and back in the 50s, Tampax or tampons were not, I think they were pretty new on the market. They were not part of the norm for women. And Dr. Lutke, William Lutke, came in one day, and he was a gynecologist, OBGYN doctor here in Madison. And he came in one day as he was lecturing to us about OBGYN, and he wanted to know how many of us still rode the white horse. And we did not know what he was talking about, but it was wearing Kotex. And he said, "Get rid of the white horse." And so we laugh now because we all went and bought tampons, and then we had to learn how to insert them, and this was all brand new to us. And, you know, he changed a lot of lives at that point. We didn't know about that, and so we learned that he was certainly telling us, you know, being women, we did not need to rely on the white horse. So I remember that class very well. And then we had classes in nutrition and, you know, medical, surgical, nursing, and all the different specialties, and orthopedics. And a lot of good instructors. Mildred Green was our OB instructor. And I tell you what, I did learn first early on in OB that you always covered a little boy when you took the diapers off. You covered off with, you put a diaper over him, or you got squirted in the face. And that was an early learning there when I was in the nursery. And that was with Alan Amici's baby. Now, he was a big football star in Madison at the time.
Wow.
It was his son, and I was changing the diapers, and boy, did I get squirted. And so I said, I remember that very well. That's you always put a diaper over the little kid. And learned a lot about, you know, OB and how the different kinds of childbirth experiences women have and how to help them through it. And, you know, then, of course, there's always the sad part, too, when there's something lost. But it was, I enjoyed OB a lot. But it's funny that I never ended up in it. It was a kind of a accident, if you will, how I did end up, because when I left Madison General, I went right to the university to get my bachelor's and ended up working there a little bit and ended up in intensive care unit. And so I ended up in critical care for 10 years. And it's just kind of funny how you're prepared, but you don't, you like, I mean, I liked working in different areas of the hospital. I did not have any particular specialty that I really, really felt I wanted to work in. I just enjoyed working with patients. And depending on what I was doing at the time, it was, you know, I enjoyed it. So I ended up in critical care just by happenstance, and enjoyed that too.
And you said you went to get your bachelor's at the university.
I did.
What did you get your bachelor's in?
I mean, you know, you came out of Madison General with a diploma. And you know, passed the state boards, and you're a registered nurse. But I always had intended, and again, I think this goes back to my family doctor. He told me I could, at that time, the university was a 5-year program for nurses. And he said, you will get the best education if you go through a 3-year program, because you'll get more hands-on experience. And then go for 2 years to the university and get your bachelor's. So I was always that was my plan from day one, that I would eventually go on to get my bachelor's from the university. So I just graduated in June of 57, and in September I was enrolled at the university.
Did you find what your family doctor said to be true about the hands-on experience?
I was a head nurse supervisor, so I had students. And being we were the first coronary care unit in the state, as well as ICU, we were part of the rotation for some students that were part of the university program, nursing program. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I, at that stage that they were in, when they came to us to learn about coronary care, that probably, yes, that I probably had been farther advanced in terms of patient care than they were at that time. But, you know, they catch up. They just did not have as much hands-on experience as we had had at that point. But so I became, you know, part of the faculty at the university with people coming through our unit, not only nurses, but also interns, medical students. Yeah, because it was a whole new branch of medicine. And as I said, we were the first in Wisconsin. So a lot of different things happening and a lot of changes. And it was where I think the first time as a nurse, I felt really powerful. I mean, I knew more than some of the doctors did by the time. So it was like we always used to stand up when the doctors would come in and follow them as they went on their rounds. And you would certainly never address them other than Dr. So-and-so. And I just remember the first time we defibrillated a patient, and the doctor said to me, "Elaine, did you really do this?" And I went, "Yes, Charlie, I did." And he kind of was taken aback a bit, but he'd always called me Miss Kletzel before that. Mm. And he kind of was taken aback a bit, but then after that, we were best friends. Uh-huh. So it, and of course, that's where we got rid of the caps, was in intensive care units. Because we had so many tubes, and those caps, I would come up from under the bed, whatever I was doing, the cap would be flipped over in my face. And I said, "That's enough of that." Mm-hmm. And also the pantsuits came in for nurses, because we were hopping up on those beds doing CPR. You know, the dress uniforms did not work. Mm-hmm. So things, I think intensive care unit nursing changed a lot in terms of what goes on today. We initiated a lot, and that was back in 1963.
And were you part of setting up the intensive care unit?
I was.
Wow.
I was. And then I did the six, when we, and this is at the old hospital, I did the respiratory intensive care unit that we opened up. And then later we opened 6 TLC, which was the Trauma Life Support Care Unit. I named it. Mm. And so that was about 10 years later, about 72, 73, when we opened that unit up. And then I worked there a couple years and as the head nurse supervisor. And the... And then went back and got my master's. Went to University of Iowa and got my master's degree. And then the new hospital in Madison, I mean, they were trying to build the new hospital, designing it, and I was on that committee. And I kept bringing up the designs for the new ICUs. And they kept coming back to me and saying, "It's too expensive. Cut back." And so I'd have to redesign, and it was like, oh, gosh, this is not going to be, I don't even want to work there, because it's, they keep making me redesign things that are going to make it not as nice. So after I got my master's, I went to work at Waukesha Memorial Hospital. And the first thing they said to me was, yeah, we understand you have experience in intensive care and maybe designing. And I went, oh, yeah. I pulled out the first design I ever made for the one for the new UW hospital. I pulled that out and put it together and gave it to the architects at Waukesha, and they went, "Oh, this looks good." And it was built.
Wow.
And I said, and it's as far as I know, it's still working today. I said, you know, that's the difference between public and private. So there, it's the money. But yeah, it was kind of interesting.
What did you get your master's degree in?
In administration, healthcare administration, yeah. I was the vice president for patient care at Waukesha Memorial. So I ended up in administration, but I'd been a head nurse and supervisor for many years up at, you know, when I was at the university. And they were the ones that encouraged me to go back and get my master's. So I did finally. But at that time, University of Wisconsin did not have a real program for that. And Iowa had one of the two top ones in the nation, the other being in New York. And so Iowa wasn't that far away. Down I went. And very good.
And how did you get involved in setting up the first ICU at UW Hospital in Wisconsin? Were you a head nurse at that point?
No,
Wow.
I was a staff nurse on 4 East, which was the women's medical unit. And one day, as I was going up the elevator to go to work in the morning, Dr. Weinstein was on the elevator with me. And he said, "Congratulations, Elaine." And I said, "What for?" And he said, "Well, you're going to be the new head nurse of the 4C ICU." I didn't even know what ICU meant. So I got off the elevator and went down to the unit and looked at my supervisor. And I said, "What is Dr. Weinstein talking about?" Well, she was so mad at him for telling me, because that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. So that's how it happened. They just had decided, I don't know why, I guess they decided that would be a good fit for me. And so then I got involved. It was an old big unit, a big ward at the end of the hall that was converted. And so I got into studying what little literature there was. There wasn't much about what ICUs should be or CCUs. How they should look or what they should be like, and at that time there were only a couple of hospitals in other areas of the United States that were really had done this for a while, and so you know I kind of talked to some of them and we figured out we only had this little space to work with, so we didn't have much choice as to how it could be physically changed, but we certainly learned a lot about how to take care of those patients and the coronary care, whole coronary care thing. And yeah, and then of course when we built to the one on 4 West, very involved in that design, and up on the 6th floor, very involved in that design too. So. Yeah.
What did good design entail for these units?
Well, it was primarily there to make sure that you could see the patients at all times, or have some kind of quick access. When we designed the first one, there were only enough space where we could only have a couple toilets, so like not every patient had a toilet in their room, and we only had 5 rooms, but there was one room that had no toilet, so they had to use the bedpan. But so it was sort of what makes it easiest for the patients and the nurses, the people taking care of the patients, and how much space do you need? You learn, you know, when you have to transfer a patient or bring in X-ray or whatever, you need certain space for a couple carts. You know, you're electronically monitoring them. You need a lot of. I worked a lot with. We had a fellow in outpatient, let me think, the cardiac part of, they were part of the school, the medical school. Wilsdorf, he was an engineer, electrical engineer, and he worked with them. And so we had, and then we had to work with the people that built and supplied the monitors. And so you went to a lot of trade shows, you talked to a lot of salesmen, you talked to a lot of technical people on how these things were to work, and then you needed to make sure you had the right electrical inputs, outputs to handle the equipment. And so it was just a matter of learning from others about what's needed for the equipment and what kind of equipment we needed. And then make sure you have room for it. Plus, so there was easy access and that the patient was visible, at least for the ones that were in the real intensive care areas. And then you get to where we designed that for the intermediate care. We had to do it. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I got to switch phones, I think.
Okay.
But we had to learn how to gradually work our way into, okay, you got them when they start out in the acute care, but then they. Just a minute.
All right.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
Then we got to where they, what's the next step? You phase them down, and so you needed an intermediate care.
I see.
And then you eventually were there, you needed some place where you could do some family work with the family, whether it be some teaching or whether it would be some, place that they could have that was private. And there were just lots of parts that, and then what kinds of patients were you going to have if, upstairs when we were on sixth floor, we knew we were going to have some burn patients. Well, then you had to make sure you had space where the infect there would be infection free and we also worked a lot hard on wallpaper. What would make people feel good? So we didn't just look at medical equipment. We also looked at, the surroundings, the environment. What would patients who were acutely ill, what would be stimulating to them, or what would be calming to them, or what would be, we didn't want blah. So there was a lot of stuff that went into it that you kind of learned as you went.
What was wallpaper that made people around them feel good?
Well, I don't know. We had different wallpaper in different areas that were kind of not too stimulating, but some that just some with some stripes or small, some floral stuff, but it was pretty tame. But it was color, and that's what we wanted, was something that was not just so it white walls, or just blank walls. We wanted something that had some color in it, but that was soothing as well. So that's what we looked for. And then the doc, a couple doctors and I, we would fight over which color, which one we liked best. And
When it was all built and set up, how did that feel?
it felt great. I mean, we were very proud of what we had accomplished, what we did, and the thing about it is, it worked. And that's the best part, is when you got it all set up and it works, people find that they can work in it easily. The patients are okay, especially the relatives feel comfortable. I mean, when you've got something that it works for everybody, then you've been successful.
And how long did you work as a nurse before going into administration?
I was at the university for what, 14 years. And then I went into administration. I was in that for what, 17 years. And then I got into, I heard about a place or a MediStar here in Madison that had a contract for the first under Medicare, contract under Medicare, for the first national study on coronary care. And it was, and it's a quality improvement organization. And that's part of the Medicare contract. Every state has to have a organization that makes sure that Medicare patients in that state are receiving accepted standard of care. And so I heard about the place here in Madison, MediStar, that had received this contract for the first national study on coronary care. Now, at Waukesha Memorial, we were very successful with the Joint Commission. Do you know what Joint Commission is?
No.
For well, they're the ones that accredit hospitals,
I see.
and they do international, and every hospital has to be accredited by Joint Commission to even get insurance or Medicare funding, to get, money. So it's very important that you have Joint Commission accreditation. And our hospital at Waukesha, we always did extremely well. And so I took a small job at a small hospital that had lost their accreditation. And I got them reaccredited. And I was there for only a couple of years, but then I was kind of I kind of got involved in this whole quality improvement bit. And so when I found out about the national study being done, I kind of went in and inquired and came to interview for it just to find out more about it. I went back. And I remember the unit clerk calling me at home that night, and she said, "We have Dr. So-and-so on the line, and he wants to talk to you. Is it okay if I give him your home phone number?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And I was surprised because I'd given him the home. Evidently, I don't know, he lost it or something. So he called, and he said, same night, he said, "We want you for this job." Oh, okay. So I came up here to Madison, back to Madison, and joined MediStar, and we did the National Coronary Care Project. And that meant working with every hospital in the state of Wisconsin. And we, at that time, this was in the 90s, at that time, it was still allowed that we could share stuff between hospitals. It's gotten harder to do that now. But we collected data, tons of data from coronary patients in every hospital in the state who cared for them. And we had indicators that were part of the national project. Now, there were five states nationally who were doing the same study. And Wisconsin was one of them. So they had this list of indicators that every hospital had to meet. They were the standards. And so we collected data and looked and saw whether they met those standards or not, and then how well they did. And then we went out to every hospital and coached them on, what they were doing well, what they were doing right, and then where they could improve. And that was probably the most fun job ever.
Really?
Yeah. Because I got to go around and just, and we could share information between hospitals. We could say, "Well, this is where you're kind of not as good as so-and-so is, and here's why. And here is what they are doing. And you could do that, and that would improve your score, so to speak. And so we did from 93, I think, to about 98. And then we did a lot of other, I mean, Medicare, that became a huge publication as far as it was nationally published as far as how all these hospitals and states were doing in taking care of patients with coronaries. But then they also did others, and we did many in how many of the states were doing well on preventing pneumococcus, in giving influenza vaccines. I did a project that I wanted to do that they okayed on breast cancer and how well we were doing as a state in making sure women got it detected early. And then what kind of, after, if they had positive, were positive for breast cancer, then what kind of treatment did they receive? And what options were they given? And, you know, what resources were available to them within their communities? So there was just a lot of things that were fun to do to improve care. And what could be better than to improve care?
Yeah.
So we've kind of gotten away from Madison General, haven't we?
It's okay. I had questions about your post education anyway, so that answered a lot of them, so that was great. I mean, we can go back to Madison General if you don't mind.
Okay.
Are there any faculty who played an important role in your education?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there were some I remember very well. I remember Mrs. Cheney. She was one of our instructors, and Mrs. McAlpine, and Mrs. Green, and OB. She was important. I remember they had nurse Mrs. Montague on 4 East. I don't know. I mean, she was real strict. And, you know, we practically saluted. But by golly, she was good. She taught me a lot anyway. And I remember Miss Woodman in OR. She taught us a lot as far as, you know, when we had to learn how to scrub in and be a assistant in OR. Let me think. I'm trying to think what other I can't. Dr. Lutke, I talked about. Dr. Norby, he was an orthopedic surgeon, and I think he gave us lectures on, you know, the orthopedic part of things. And, but we were trying to remember who else we remembered. Mr. Henry in pharmacy. He was the head pharmacist, and of course he did some teaching too. And everybody remembers Nellie Brown, who was our night supervisor for a million years. And she really was on top of everybody when you work nights. She made sure, gosh, nothing went wrong. And, you know, mainly, of course, it was Miss Goff and Miss Allison who were our main people. And I just remember Miss Goff, first thing, one of the early things that we learned, you never run when you're in uniform. Never run. And if she saw anybody running between McConnell Hall and the hospital, she let them know that was not appropriate. So we learned to be very professional. And I remember we had to learn how to print, because they didn't want us to be like doctors where nobody could read our writing. And it was important that, you know, our notes be able to be read. So there was And then, of course, we went to UW for classes our first year. We did. We took a lot of, like, chemistry and a lot of science classes through the university in our first year at Madison General.
Did you enjoy those classes?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, we're all new. We're bright-faced 18-year-olds who are just out for the first time away from our homes. And, yeah, this is all new and exciting. And I think some people were homesick, but most of us were really just very eager to get with it and learn and figure out what we're going to do with the rest of our lives.
Were there any particularly challenging aspects of your education?
Well, lots were challenging. I mean, there's always that. In terms of the different specialties as I was learning, I suppose to me, psych was not my favorite. Mm-hmm. I did not enjoy having all these patients walking around like zombies. I did not think that was, and or you know, seeing in electric shock treatments. Those things were kind of stressful. Mm. But other than that, you know, I enjoyed OR. I enjoyed OR, but not. I was not. That was not my thing. You know, I just preferred being able to talk to patients, and I couldn't. They were out. So I didn't enjoy OR as much as some others did. And I loved pediatrics. I loved working with the kids. But other than that, I don't remember anything challenging. Probably the most challenging thing I had was the course in statistics.
Oh. Why was that?
I didn't do well with statistics. I did eventually, because I got to be, when I was working at MediStar, we got to use a lot of data. There was a lot of statistical analysis. But by when I was young at that time, it took me a while to get it. So that part I loved everything else.
Were there any resources available to nursing students outside of the classroom if they were needed?
Oh, you mean like library?
Sure, yeah, tutoring, study groups.
Oh, I don't know. There was, I certainly, any student that was having difficulty, Miss Goff or Miss Allison would help them, and it was always a matter of, you know, what the problem was. But most of the time, it wasn't so much an educational problem as it was more maybe being away from home kind of thing.
I see.
Yeah, I don't remember anybody having any real problem. I know one of our classmates left. She did not do well right from the start. And so that happens all the time. But nothing that I recall as being special. We had resources available to us as far as the libraries go in the university. And, you know, what was that, the many doctors and nurses that were working at the hospital that were already, I had one who was, well, the upperclassmen were big resources for us.
Oh.
I do remember that. I was a patient myself. I forgot what was wrong with me. But I know I ended up being admitted. And
wow.
I shouldn't even tell you this, but one of the upperclassmen was, she was a night nurse on that day. And I was awake. And she took me along and showed me how to give an IM injection. Now, that we would frown on. Oh, she's said, "You want to learn how to do an IM?" Yeah, off I went in my gown. I was the patient, so mm-hmm. that was probably a no-no. So we had them that were always there for us as well.
So how, if at all, do you think your education at Madison General played a role in how you understood quality care for later in your career?
Well, I think it was partially just the standards that were established and how we were to act, how we were, you know, to be always present, mm-hmm. listen, learn, and then react. How we were to make sure that our charting was accurate and legible, that we were honest, and that we were, I think the best thing I remember learning too much was how to actually be in the present, in the moment, to really listen and to be aware of what the reaction was of the patient. So you just, you know, you kind of build on that as you get more experience and you learn more.
How did you learn to interact with patients at Madison General Hospital, aside from running in the hall, not running in the hallways?
Oh, well, by taking care of them, by learning, by doing. That was the main thing, is you did it by doing. And initially, it sometimes was a little frightening. You didn't know what to say or what to do, especially in really tough situations. But, you know, I would observe how the more experienced nurses did it, or how the head nurse, you know, what they did, and so you kind of watched and listened and learned. Hmm. And it depends a lot on your own personality, of course.
And so now, sorry, going back to your career.
Yeah.
Are there any other memorable moments of your time as a nurse or in administration or working for the National Study that you'd maybe want to add?
Oh, boy. I mean, there's so many. I don't even know where to begin there. I had lots of wonderful moments where either a patient would come in and thank me, or the family would come in, and you get a lot of appreciation. And I remember taking care of a patient in the coronary care unit who was, we literally saved because we did, CPR and whatever, and he managed to pull through. And years later, and his wife was there a lot with him, and she got to know us well. And would invite us over to their house after he went home. Uh-huh. And years later, his daughter came to interview for a job at Waukesha Memorial for me.
Wow.
And I mean, I was just like, oh, you're so-and-so's daughter. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I took care of your dad. You know, it was just so unreal.
Uh-huh.
But That was sort of different. The other things, I just, there was just so many good memories with doctors, mm-hmm. with patients, you know, just through the years, and how time has changed and what technology has brought to us and what we can do today that we could not do then. And it's quite great.
What advice would you give to future nursing students?
Oh, learn from the best. And, always I think it's the main thing is be compassionate, be empathetic, and just be intelligent.
Well, is there anything else that we maybe missed throughout the interview?
Oh, golly, I don't know. I'm enjoying my retirement now.
How long have you been retired?
Oh, gosh, almost 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So right now I don't do much of anything, but before that I was, now I'm the patient, but before that I mostly just traveled. I wanted to see other cultures. I wanted to see how the rest of the world lived.
Wow.
So that was what I did.
But, where did you go?
Well, I went all over. I mean, I've been on several cruises. I've traveled, spent a month in Europe. I've spent weeks in China, Thailand, Hong Kong, you know, the Far East. Been there. I've been to all 50 states.
Wow.
And tent camped through most of them.
Wow.
And so it's been, you know, I've seen most of the world and Australia. I've got a good friend in Australia.
Wow.
That we still email back and forth. I was lucky. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. I was lucky when I was at Waukesha to become invited to a fellowship program at Wharton.
Wow.
Business School in Pennsylvania. It's for nurse administrators.
Wow.
And they did for hospitals that were large, 1,000-bed hospitals.
I'm sorry, I think
And then they brought in those that were like on 400 beds or bigger, and that's what we were. We were 400 beds. So I applied and got there and spent a whole summer there.
Hmm.
With, and my bosses supported me, which was very nice. And we attended courses at Wharton School of Business and had a fantastic time. They allowed, I think it was 30 students each year, plus one from out of country.
Wow.
And the one from out of country for our class was from Australia. And so Jill and I are still friends.
Oh.
From that period of time. So it's, and then I finished, and then they had us come back every year for like a alumni.
Wow.
Get together, a refresher. So I'd go back to Philly every year for several years with all of the alumni from all of the classes.
Wow.
So it was a great experience there. And getting to, you know, you get to compare notes.
Hmm.
You learn a lot from each other. And I think that's one of the big skills is listening.
Hmm.
And using what you learn into what you're doing. What can I learn? What can I learn, use from this information?
Mm-hmm.
What will apply to our situation? And use it. That's the one thing I miss most is that today there's not the sharing that used to go on, because that would make the quality of healthcare so much better if that was true. Because everybody now wants to get everything at their place, so they get the money, and they don't want us, if they find something that works really well, they hate to share it.
Hmm.
And that's what's hard is, you know, not doing that. Being at the university here, at that time, hospitals from all over the state used us. And so we were sharing a lot of information at that point throughout the state.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden everybody was in competition And so it became, instead of working together, it became, competitors. And so that's what it has remained. And the competition is out there, and there's nothing, I guess, we're going to do about it, except that that's too bad. It's sad that we don't have that anymore, because that would enhance quality of care.
Do you think you felt that shift during your career at some point, or was it
Oh, yeah.
after?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no. I felt that when I was working at Waukesha. Yeah. We were in competition at that point with St. Luke's and Milwaukee. A couple heart surgeons had, and we wanted to share, and no way. So there was a lot of, yeah, that was starting way back then.
And I think it cut out earlier when you were just describing the Wharton Fellowship.
Okay, what?
Can you, sorry, just to clarify, the fellowship was for what?
Nurse executives.
Nurse executives, I see.
Yeah, I will tell you why. Back in the day, a lot of nursing directors were people that were promoted from within, but had never received advanced degrees. And so, I think Johnson and Johnson sponsored this, by the way. So Johnson and Johnson evidently had visions of getting together the nursing administrators and being helping them enhance their administrative skills. I went out. Did that block off again?
No, I heard that.
Oh. Anyway, that was their premise, was that they would enhance the skills of the those that had not been able to go on to school. But then it evolved because suddenly all of the nursing administrators had advanced degrees. It was no longer acceptable, just to promote from within. And so then it became where they were even doing further enhancements, if you will, and doing a lot more things that related to, like, marketing skills, things that were more temporary. So it was just part of the whole, my battery is going.
Oh,
That's what's happening.
I see.
So I think we have to end it.
Well, if there's anything else that you think of, we can potentially schedule a follow-up interview too, if
Oh,
that's.
well, I think I've just about done everything I can, or said everything I can think of.
Well, good. It was great information.
I think we got a farther afield than I thought we would, but okay. Hope it. I don't know what this will have to do with the oral history of Madison General, though.
It's valuable because we got to see how your education played a role in your career.
Well, that's true. That's true. And they did start it all. So
Exactly.
bless them.
Well,
Yeah.
unless there's anything else you'd like to include, I will turn the recorder off and then I have a couple things to go over with you, but just wanted to make sure that you're still there
Okay.
for that.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much.